No Agenda Live. High quality podcasts. You're listening to the No Agenda Stream.
We're just two good old boys with a story to tell. Discussing the news, the law, and the hell. From courts to books, we lay it all bare. Just two good old boys with a casual flair.
Howdy, Ben. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good, Gene. I got my new toy in.
Yeah, you sound excited.
Well, you know, $2,400 later.
Yeah, that's not a bad deal. We ran some quick and dirty speed tests today, and you are officially running on a faster gaming machine than me right now.
Yeah, when I plan to basically run no games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll run a couple.
But sure.
Yeah, it's good. I'm super happy because what you got is basically middle of the road gear, and it's on par, even a little bit faster than my 5-year-old at this point. I keep thinking 4, but it's actually 5 now, yeah. Which was top of the line gear at the time when I got it.
Well, I mean, the only way I could get higher end would be to, you know, basically max out the... I'm on one of the top ends of the Radeon graphics cards.
Yeah,
I mean... So, I'd have to go with, a 5090 or something.
Exactly. That would certainly add another $2,000 to the mix.
Right, and I went with the last generation 3DFX processor. So, yeah.
Yeah, which is still faster than the first generation that I'm running by about 25%, mm-hmm. which is good. So I'm sure the current generation one's probably another 15% or so faster than the one you got. So yeah. I'm very happy about all this because I'm hoping to build my next machine this year, probably closer to Christmas. But by that point in time, I'm really hoping that Radeon has their top-of-the-line card in their... Generation 9 out, which they still haven't. Everybody thought it'd be out last Christmas, but they didn't have it out. So hopefully it'll be out by this Christmas. But I've been very happy running the AMD setup, AMD motherboard chip, and AMD Radeon video cards.
Yeah. Well, I'm, still playing with stuff and haven't even taken all the peels off. So...
Yeah, well, I usually do that once it finds its permanent spot. If you're going to keep moving it, no point in taking stuff off.
Yeah, I don't want to take stuff off until, like I said, I've got its permanent spot.
Mm-hmm. Now, hopefully your airflow vents aren't covered with plastic, though.
No, of course not.
No. Yeah, let's go. All exciting news just in time for your trip.
Right, yeah. And I've still got to get the monitors from you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to be inheriting some nice monitors there. I think you'll have more than you know what to do with.
Well, geez, how many are you giving me?
4.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were giving me that big one, too.
I am giving you the big one.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd love to give you the Mac one, too, and make it 5, but you don't want to take that.
I don't need the...
I know. I just need to get rid of it. I can't bring myself just throw away an Apple-branded monitor.
But what? Why aren't you using it, then?
Because I'm running 4Ks on everything I have now.
Okay.
And this is a 27-inch monitor. So, I mean... When I got it, it was a $1,000 monitor, but that was many years ago.
Giving me your throwaways?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, man, if you got throwaways that are as nice as the stuff I'm giving you, I'll take throwaways of different kind. I'll tell you what I will happily take as a throwaway is your all the first generation 3D printed. Mm-hmm. Silencers that you're going to make.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but part of the reason why
nice and close to the mic.
Part of the reason why I got this, well, I'm hitting the red, man, when I'm too close.
Well, your gait was starting to cut in and chopping
you off. Really? Interesting. Well, let me turn the gait off and on, because that's one thing I've noticed.
Oh, some settings don't stick?
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. Hey, I don't want to switch topics, just so we don't forget, Adam Curry's got his rig running on Linux now, so.
Did he get it all? I didn't listen to today's show. Did he get the rig fully running? I know he had written some stuff.
I don't know how fully running it is, but he got it running on, I mean, it's working and it's doing multiple channels for him on Linux.
Yeah, he's using the Rodecaster 2 Pro, so I haven't tried and looked at what it would take for me to adapt his stuff to...
Which, I mean, you've just got fewer channels than yours, but it's the same company.
Right. And I'm not using the video pass-through or capture card. But I don't know how that messes with the compliance, because he's using the USB 2 compliant driver.
I thought it would... Oh, really? That's surprising, actually. I thought it would
I've looked at his GitHub.
So. I haven't. All right, good. So, yeah, let me know if you end up running Linux.
I will.
Because the PC that you're running this on right now could become your Linux PC, because now you have a gaming PC that's running Windows.
Yep, sure could. Could become the little studio PC.
Yeah.
Or I could use it actually in the server closet as a NAS. Or something.
There you go. Yeah.
Yep.
And then, you know, at some point, eventually, probably after the next generation of the Steam box is out and people have figured out how to get it installed on non-Steam software or hardware.
People are already doing that.
Well, I mean, people were doing that before Steam. But, I mean, the big thing that's coming imminently, like in the next 2.5 months... or 2 months, I guess, because first quarter is the all the details and the what the Steam box actually is and the cost and everything else, because we're still a little bit in the dark on that.
Yeah. And I was kind of on the fence, if you remember, about, do I want to get a full PC or do I want to wait for the Steam box to come out? And it's like, no, I want the hardware. I want something that I can run VMs on and I can do everything I want to do. So,
well, and that's the beauty of it. I mean, what you got is a great gaming computer, but if you're not running games 90% of the time, it's a great computer for everything else, including VMs and AI stuff.
Yep. Well, and the processor I got and the graphics card I got would be great for AI stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to play around with some of that locally. I'm not real interested in, you know, the cloud stuff. So I did have to run extra power into my office and the network closet, though.
Well, that's, I guess, not super surprising. You got it all managed?
I'm sorry?
You got it all managed? Everything taken care of?
Yeah, I'm running my computer. So my computers... My network closet and all my computers in the office are now running on a dedicated 20-amp breaker.
Nice.
So I added two outlets, one to under my desk and one in the network closet. Dude, I've done electrical stuff in the past. My dad was a contractor, so I've done a lot. That was one of the biggest pain in the ass installs I've ever had to do, because in my attic... climbing around in the attic and getting over the breaker box and drilling through the sill plate, I had to go to Lowe's and get a different drill bit, and I had to get a 90-degree setup for my impact driver to be able to do it. And my hands are beat up because it's real tight to the roof, and all the nails from the shingles sticking through the roof and banging my hand against it. Yeah. Anyway, and then I had to fish it through and use the push pole and everything. But I left a pull wire, so next time it'll be way easier.
Yeah, so well, that's good. Yeah, all that stuff is just infinitely easier to do before the drywall goes up.
Yes, indeed. Like, it's meant to be done before the drywall goes up. It gets really difficult when it's not. Now, luckily, I had good access to the back of the wall for both the networking closet and... my outlet under my desk. So, you know, putting in a remodeler's box and poking that through the wall isn't that big of a deal. It's just really going from the junction box down into the breaker box that was a pain.
Yeah, that stuff's not cheap. I remember when I put in a 240 volt for my electric car in the garage, that was $350 for a cable run of 2 feet.
Say so what now?
The plug was 2 feet from the junction box.
Right, but how much was it?
$350.
For an electrician to do it.
Over $300, yeah.
Mm-hmm. For an electrician, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's why I did it myself.
Right. But, yeah, I just didn't want to fuck with it. But he ended up actually replacing some other stuff for me while he was out there, so it turned out to be worthwhile getting him out. And I just got a price to have another dedicated circuit run from the garage circuit breaker to the attic, and that was $700.
For where you're at now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you need a circuit breaker in the attic for?
Not a circuit breaker, a separate circuit.
Right, but what do you need it for?
Stuff.
Okay. Give Anne Frank some power?
Lights or anything?
I was going to say, are you going to give Anne Frank some power?
Yeah. No. She's fine in the dark. Unless Anne Frank is a different type of weed these days. I don't know. So, yeah, that shit's not cheap to get from electricians. And this is why I've been saying for quite a while, probably over a decade, I've been telling friends that instead of spending money in college, they ought to send their kids to electrician school.
Yeah, electricians or welders.
And then write them a check for $100,000 to start them off in life. Because frankly, that'll cost half as much as college, and they'll be in a much better position in their 20s right off the get-go. Because they'll have $100,000 to buy a house for down payment, and they'll have a job that makes them six figures.
Well, and electricians and welders are always in supply, are always in demand, rather. Mm. And I mean, I remember when we were working one of the defense contractor projects, Facebook, Meta, and Google were putting in data centers nearby. And, you know, the electricians would walk across the street for 50 cents an hour. Mm-hmm. And what that ended up meaning is the electrical stuff ended up going in very, very slowly and causing lots of issues with schedules and everything. Welders, you know, anytime there's a pipeline project, they'll do the same thing. And we're going to be building out some stuff, man. So yeah,
I think welders, there's a huge range. Like the beginner low range on welders, about $20 an hour. It's not great, but that goes up over $65 an hour for guys that can make very pretty clean welds. So it is definitely another good potential career choice. I just like electrical because it doesn't matter if it's commercial or industrial or home. Like, there's always a need for electrical.
Yeah. So, on the electrical side, do you have good access to your attic?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Is there no way
to get from the garage to the attic.
Why?
Because there's bedrooms above the garage.
Ew.
Mm-hmm.
Ew, yeah,
that's what makes it expensive.
Yeah,
it's not a straight line pull. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you might even be better off going, I assume the breaker box is on an exterior wall.
No, it's inside.
In the garage.
In the garage, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's not on an exterior wall?
No, it's on an interior wall.
Oh, so what the electrician's going to do is he's going to cut the drywall and pull the line and then tell you to patch it. You know that, right?
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the other thing he mentioned was going outside the house.
That's what I was going to say, is you could go outside, but again, if the breaker box isn't on an outside wall, you're still going to have to get creative.
Yeah, and obviously the best way to do it would be to go from the garage between the two floors and then fish that out on the floor of the attic. But yeah, I get it. It's a lot of work. I haven't pulled cable since I was in my 20s, but I remember how much of a pain in the ass it was in my 20s. I wired up the company I worked at. I had to pull a bunch of Ethernet cables through, which is easier than electrical, frankly. You just put them and plug them there, but it's still a major pain in the ass pulling cable in a finished building. When I was building my, not this house, but the house I had before, I provided all the plans to the builders, and then I was there every week, once a week, making sure that they were actually putting shit in where I wanted to. And I did something that I would happily do in another new construction in the future, which is overbuild. Instead of having one outlet for every, I don't know what it is, 16 feet of wall space, wherever the hell it is, I had them cut that in half. So there's an outlet basically every 6 or 7 feet. There was also an Ethernet jack in every room, and some of the rooms had two Ethernet jacks. So it was pre-wired for anything that somebody would want to do. Back then, also, I had coax in every room, which I wouldn't bother doing at this point.
Yeah, so I've got coax in every bedroom and lots of them. And I've got Cat 6 to a lot of places around the house.
Yeah, which you kind of surprised me that that can actually run 10 gig.
Yeah. Cat 6 can do a lot. Cat 5 can run 10 gig for a short period, for a short distance. And I've got, in fact, I pulled while I was in the attic, I pulled another Ethernet cable over to above my garage where I'm going to put one of the access points. So that means I only have one access point left to pull the cable for. So I will have 12 Ethernet drops around the house, four of which are under my desk. So,
yeah. I think if I was building a house again from scratch, I would probably put fiber in every room.
It's expensive.
I know.
And very delicate.
But that's why I would do it during a build, not try and retrofit.
Yeah, when you're doing fiber installs like that, though, like the problem with fiber is if you're going with just a single pair to a room, getting an armored cable, which is what you'd want, is extraordinarily expensive. Most of the armored cables, you know, have like 48 pair in them and stuff like that. But then you can't really fan out the way you want.
Yeah. Yeah. You would need, I think the smallest I've seen is 8 pair. But
that's
you'd have
way
to
overkill to a bedroom.
It's total overkill. Absolutely. But I don't know. I just like the flexibility and the fact that you can run 100 gig in there.
Yeah, but you can do a lot, dude, with copper. Like,
yeah, I know. It's all so much faster than it was. I was remembering back to when I first got my first wireless, my first Wi-Fi, which was not a standard at the time. I remember I got it. It would have been probably like a 90. Let me see. It would have been in 95, 96. Right around that time period. 96, probably. And there was a company that came out with a wireless networking that was an old, not a CF even laptop card, but you remember those old.
Yeah, the large MCIA. Size cards? Yeah.
Yeah, whatever the hell they were called. I can't remember.
PCMA or what?
PCM, yeah. PC mobile card, something like that.
Yep. Yeah, I had a 802.11a
card. Okay, all right. But one of those things, and there was no 802 anything. It was pre-standard. And I remember I had a laptop sitting, or I had it in my laptop, and then I had another computer that was had another one of those cards on the receiving end that was plugged into my stereo. And so I could do something so cool in the mid-90s is I could control my playback of MP3s. Maybe it wasn't even MP, maybe it was just WAV files. But I could control that remotely from my laptop. I just thought that was the coolest damn thing ever.
Yeah.
And it was probably that, I think it was under 1 meg in speed. I mean, it was ridiculously slow. But then again, at that time, and I was already ahead of the curve, but I had ISDN. So mm-hmm. I was running on dual ISDN channels, which is 128 kilobit.
Yeah. Well, and it's actually three channels.
Faster than everybody else.
ISDN was three channels because you had one channel for control of the signal.
Yeah, but two usable channels.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it was still like three times faster than the fastest modem speeds we were getting, which was very, and it was always on.
I was stuck on dial up.
I had ISDN, a phone as well. So the phone was native ISDN. So if I wasn't, you know, on the phone, then I would be using both lines for network. If I picked up the phone and one of those ISDN lines would become a voice line and the network would keep running on the other one.
Yeah, so, just slower.
Yeah. But the big difference was the speeds, just how slow everything was compared to now. It's, and you know, we literally, it was under a meg for wireless networking, and I was like, holy shit, this is so awesome. Nobody has this except for me.
Do you remember the old Cisco router interconnect cables because Ethernet was too slow?
Yeah.
They're green, serial, big chunky things.
On the front, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I remember those. But so we're like 10,000 or 100,000 times faster now, right? Am I doing my math right?
Easily.
So we went from a meg to 10 gig.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So 1,000 times to get to a gig, and then we went to 10. So 10,000. Yeah, 10,000 times faster networking now. Pretty cool. Of course, most things were smaller back then, but not you know, 1,000 times smaller. But since I'm reminiscing, I do remember that on my first Mac Plus that I had in the late 80s, it came with 1 meg of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
And that was huge because the system itself, when you're booted, took about, I want to say it was under 100K. So it was somewhere between like 80 and 100K. So you had about 900K empty for running software. And the remember the, when the Mac originally came out, it had 128K of memory. And so a lot of software was written for 128K. So I remember I used to run a RAM disk on the Mac that took about half of that meg and use it for RAM or for a disk drive, for a virtual RAM disk drive, which was an image that would be loaded off my SCSI disk into RAM, and then that would make the computer obviously run a lot faster because it's all sitting in RAM.
Yeah.
And still had enough memory to run, you know, pretty much any other program, whether it was Microsoft Word or some rudimentary black and white game or the original version of Photoshop, which wasn't called Photoshop back then. I can't remember what it is, but it's the thing that became Photoshop, which came out for the Mac Plus that was black and white originally. Oh man, things were wild.
I remember my first gaming PC that I set up.
Mm-hmm.
It's ironic because I've vacillated back and forth between Intel and AMD. Like my very first computer was 386, 286.
Mm-hmm.
The first computer I built was a 486 back in the day. And then the first gaming PC I ever built out was on an AMD K62 processor. I had 128 megs of RAM. Yeah. I had the Quantum Fireball 5400 RPM mm-hmm. IDE hard drive mm-hmm. that was the fastest hard drive at the time. It was like, oh God, I don't even remember, like a gigabyte or something. Like it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is in like 98.
Oh, okay.
And then I was running Windows 98, and I had a Voodoo 3 graphics card.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, back in the day, the old Voodoo cards, they were the shit in the day.
Yeah, I had.
Like, I don't know how that company failed. Like, they had such a leg up on everybody.
Everybody, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because the games were all written for DOS back then, so even if you were running Windows, you had to go into DOS mode to run. And that's what the only way that they ran with acceptable frame rates, like Doom and stuff like that. But, yeah, mine was a little bit earlier, so I remember the first hard drive I ever bought was an Imprimis, so it was a Seagate drive, so Seagate ended up buying Imprimis, so this was made before it was part of Seagate, but it was a 320 megabyte full height, 5 1/4. So it means like 2 half heights on top of each other. Mm-hmm. Hard drive. This thing weighed probably about, well, I don't know what it weighed by itself, but it was in the drive case that was in, which was the size of a shoebox. It was probably about 8 or 9 pounds. I mean, this is not a light drive, SCSI drive. It was the largest commercially available SCSI drive that you could buy at the time, and it was $1,000. That was my first major purchase for that computer off of money that I basically made as a kid, was to get that ginormous drive. And I used to drive that drive to meetups.
Like LAN parties.
At least once. This is not even LAN parties, dude. This is like pirate parties. This is like guys that all bring their hard disks, set up their computers, and then you all go through and you see, oh, you know, you got a whole collection of blah de blah. I want to get that. Let me plug in my SCSI disk into you. This is like pre-LAN. Everyone was just standalone computers, but physically in one spot.
Did you ever, so gaming and energy drinks, right? Did you ever drink the energy drink balls?
No, balls came after me. I drank Jolt. Jolt was the only thing that you could theoretically call an energy drink back in my day. Most people just drank Mountain Dew, frankly, because it's readily available. But Jolt, their whole marketing slogan was all the caffeine and twice the sugar.
Yeah.
Which is great marketing. So
I remember setting up for a LAN party in college. Mm-hmm. So when I was at LCSC, Lewis Clark State College, because I graduated high school early and my parents didn't want me to go to A&M at 16. I was part of the LC Web Monks. Mm-hmm. And it was web development and hacking / gaming group. And anyway, we put together some money to set up a LAN party, big LAN party. We had like 100 people there.
Wow, that's pretty good.
And I did all the networking and set up the servers and all that. Anyway, I was up for like 24 hours straight beforehand getting everything ready, right? Because we only had so much time for the space. And then I played and, you know, went all night again. And I went through so many of the balls energy drinks. It was not safe. Like, yeah, I was so sweaty afterwards.
Yeah, it's, what year was that?
2003.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's, but I think I started playing games again right around 2003. Because I played the super early games in the early 2000s. Early 90s. So like literal DOS games.
Escape from Castle Wolfenstein.
Yeah. That kind of stuff. And I was, from about, I'd say, 94 till about 2003. So for about a 10-year period, I didn't really play any video games. Which makes some sense because I was in my 20s. I had other interests that were female instead of video games. And so it wasn't until like 3 years into my marriage that I actually kind of thought, I wonder what's available for video games these days. And I made potentially the mistake, depending on how you look at it, mm-hmm. of one of those first games, the first true multiplayer game that I ever got into was EVE Online.
I never played EVE.
I never did the magical ones, because EVE is the space version of the RPG kind of, real-time strategy multiplayer games, whatever they call it. You know, with the wizards and the dragons and the elves and all that crap. Never got into those, but I always loved space. And so when the space version came out, I was like, oh, this is cool. And that sucked me in big time. And I was, to the point where by 2010, I was basically playing EVE 40 hours a week. And working 40 hours a week. And not seeing my wife at all. So...
Yeah, I wonder why you got divorced.
I know, right? It's like, huh? And then the next year, I got divorced. Interesting how that works out. But to be fair, I wouldn't have seen my wife anyway, because I was traveling Monday through Friday. And so I was sitting in a hotel room playing video game on a laptop. Mm. And eventually two laptops, so I can do multiple accounts. Multiboxing.
Yeah, I don't know. So through college, I built a Pentium 4 class PC back mm-hmm. when that was the hottest chip, and I was overclocking it. Mm-hmm. And I played some PC games, but after that computer, that was my last real gaming rig. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to Xbox. And of course, hacked the Xbox, and that was the original Xbox hacked was awesome. Mm-hmm, it was an awesome console. And then got the 365, played with a bunch of friends. I had a huge projector.
360.
Yeah. Yeah. 360. I got that, and I had a huge mm-hmm. projector. So we would mm-hmm. play, Call of Duty Zombies all the time and see how far we could get. And then after that, that's the last console I've owned other than a Raspberry Pi with RetroPie loaded on it with a bunch of old games.
Do you have a projector right now?
No.
Would you like one?
What kind of projector?
It's 1080p. It's like $2,000 when I bought it.
Does it need a new bulb?
No. No, it shouldn't. It's been sitting and not plugged in for about 7 years. It was my projector that I had at my old studio here in Austin.
Uh-huh.
And it was really bright. I actually I was part of South By 1 year where we did the premiere of a movie that I was a producer for at my studio with that projector. Had about 80 people in there. And the reason I got it is because it was able to project an image that was 18 feet tall.
Mm.
So it was a really, I had it mounted on the ceiling. And I remember watching Netflix out there. And it's basically, movie theater size screen at that point for the size space it was, which was basically a 2,000 square foot warehouse.
Yeah. So my projector set up in my apartment in college was pretty, pretty sick, because I had 70 some odd inch screen that we were playing mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. and, standard def back then, but it was still just such an awesome experience for everybody. Now, of course I had to have blackout curtains and all that to use during the day, but
projectors are good. Well, I still have only had a projector in my bedroom. I mean, I've never got a TV for there because it just looks so good. My bedroom screen is about 160 inches, and I don't know why anyone would want a smaller TV. Like, if I'm laying in bed, most of the wall is the screen.
Yeah.
And it doesn't require a giant TV sitting there when it's not.
Do you actually have a projector screen, or are you just using the wall?
No, I always intended to buy one. I wanted to see whether I needed one. And what I realized is that if I watch TV during the day in the bedroom, I would probably get a screen. But since the only time I ever turn on the bedroom projector is when I'm in bed, it's always dark. And
as long as your wall's not too textured, that's the only thing.
Yeah, and the wall is totally flat. I mean, it's matte. It's not flat, like shiny flat, but it's matte. But there's no like fake texture on it or something. Mm-hmm. And it works fine. And, you know, I don't think I would like it if I was any closer. But basically, you know, my head is up towards the opposite wall in bed. So I'm looking across the whole bed and then the empty space in front of it. But it gives me about the same angles of view when I'm laying in bed as I normally would have on a 43-inch monitor that's, you know, 2.5 feet away from my head when I'm sitting in front of a computer. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of what I'm used to. But it's so much more compact, not to mention cheaper. I think the projector's only about $1,000 when I got it. Whereas the TV that size, if you could get one, it would be probably $15,000.
Prices have definitely come down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For normal size screens, which is anything under 32 inches, they are unbelievably cheap, as I saw during the Christmas sale last year, which is why I got a couple of more 4K monitors.
By the way, I'm not doing any heavy load right now, but my CPU is at 37 degrees.
37 Celsius. Okay.
Yeah.
So 37 is about what it gets to here in Austin in summer outside. So it's not even.
You get to like, you know, 40. More like 50.
No, we don't get to 50.
You don't get to over 100 degrees?
100 is not 50, dude.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
100 degrees Celsius is 214 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, but...
So 50 degrees would be 107 Fahrenheit.
That's not how it works, dude. It's not the formula.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. It's 5/9 plus 32. Or 9/5 plus 32. It's not a straight linear formula.
Celsius linear, literally is.
Offset. No, well, it isn't, though. But we can look up. It's actually...
You're right. You get minus 32. You're right.
So,
but anyway.
So it's 37, you said?
Yeah. Yeah. So well, no, it's actually dropped.
Celsius is how much in Fahrenheit?
I don't know. You tell me.
That's not 212. 32 degrees Celsius is how much in Fahrenheit? 90 degrees. There we go.
Stupid yeah, rock. So you get hotter than that.
Yeah, we get hotter than that, absolutely. But it's my point was how cold your computer was, not how hot your computer was.
Yeah.
Now, your computer is literally like outdoor weather temperature, which is...
And I got the nice Lanley glass case.
Yeah, they've always made nice stuff. I always like their stuff.
Yep.
I'm very happy with the purchase. Just for reference, now my computer I think is probably doing a little more than yours, but mine is sitting at 62 degrees Celsius.
Mm-hmm. So but
almost double.
I went with water cooling on the CPU, which I think is overkill, but...
Nope. It's always better water cooled.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, shout out to the manufacturer who I bought this from, because anyone who's looking for a computer...
You should sign up for a thing for
them. Yeah. CyberPower PC. They were $100 cheaper than I could have gotten the parts on PC Part Picker, plus they assembled it, plus I got a 3-year warranty. So it's pretty amazing to me.
Yeah, and I've bought... one of my PCs from them as well. There's two companies that are literally located within about 10 miles of each other, which is iBuyPower and CyberPower. And they're the kind of two companies competing with each other usually. Mm-hmm. And I found that the CyberPower had a little better configurations than iBuyPower. But they're basically Chinese immigrant companies that do direct sourcing of components from China.
Yeah.
And then they're able to assemble those in California, which is actually interesting because that if they're still making them fairly quickly like this, it means they're not using illegal labor, which is surprising given that they're in Los Angeles, both those guys.
Yeah. And, but they're, I thought CyberPower was Canadian owned.
No.
Okay.
Nope. And then there, yeah, I watched the documentary on them. They're literally 10 miles apart.
Okay.
And the other place that's right next to them there and say a little further out is Newegg.
Yeah. Yeah. And who doesn't love Newegg?
Which also was started by Chinese immigrants. Yeah. I've had an account on Newegg probably for 20 years, maybe longer, and using them since they were a very little company, and they've managed to compete very successfully with Amazon for component stuff.
Well, the last gaming PC that I built, and I'm running a burn-in benchmark right now.
Okay, good.
The last I bought all the parts from Newegg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I used to have a little business that built PCs. So I would kind of figure out what all the products were and then had some people that were assembling them for me. I used to sell PCs, little servers built specifically for photographers, mm-hmm. little side business. And yeah, I mean, I was getting pallets from Newegg coming in.
Yeah, in college, my first job, you know, outside of being a kid and having jobs as a kid, but my first job in college was working at a little Linksys Larry shop that's still in town today, and I built, I don't know how many PCs there, you know, just building custom PCs for people, mm-hmm. including gaming rigs and stuff, and we sourced all our stuff from Newegg almost.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the only thing that kind of gave any competition for Newegg was Micro Center, which I always loved Micro Center, even though it's gone bankrupt twice.
Because you could walk in and pick up parts.
Yeah, and unlike other stores like Best Buy or what's the one that closed? Fry's. Mm-hmm. Micro Center actually had the stuff I wanted. So,
and they had experts there that could
help that you. I never needed those. They were all idiots compared to me. But they had the stuff that
About for the general consumer.
Yeah, for the general consumer. But I don't think it was mostly general consumer going to Micro Center. I think it was a lot of guys like me that, you know, knew enough to know exactly what they want. And you could either get your stuff mail order or go to Micro Center because they would carry the exact same. Like they would have the different brands of thermal paste. So you would get good thermal paste instead of the shitty one that came for free. They had the oversized fans that nobody was using back 15 years ago, but they already were carrying larger fans. So I always liked that store. And I think there is still at least one around in Dallas. I think they've gone through at least two, let me say, bankruptcies over the years. You remember CompUSA, or is that before your time?
Yeah, I do.
So CompUSA was their main competitor back in the day. And CompUSA was more, I always thought, carried like more consumer products, whereas Micro Center carried more enthusiast products. So I was kind of happy that they survived when CompUSA went under.
So we've had a lot of computer talk. We should probably get to politics. I know we're both geeking out on this.
I know. Well, you got a new toy and I started reminiscing and that's how it goes.
So I kind of want to start with the other ice shooting.
Okay. Yep.
Have you been paying attention?
You mean which other one?
The guy that got shot this time.
Yeah. The good. No, good was the first one. Pretty. This one's pretty.
Yeah.
I posted immediately, which of course was too soon probably. I said, if this is not a fake op, then explain to me why the two names are pretty good.
Well, it's not just that, but so now footage of him vandalizing ICE vehicles has come out.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. you know, he was looking to get in a fight with ICE.
Oh, and he was literally yelling at an ICE agent as he's kicking, and he successfully kicked out the taillight on the Suburban. That mm-hmm. takes a significant amount of foot force to kick yep. out the taillight. You got to break and, every screw that's holding it.
And he's carrying a weapon, which isn't mm-hmm. a problem. And, you know, some people on the right were making a big deal of him carrying an extra mag. I literally carry an extra mag every time I carry.
It's not an issue.
It kind of balances you out, you know?
The people on the left all of a sudden are all for the Second Amendment, which is hilarious.
Right. But here's the thing. I really subscribe to the theory. So he was carrying a SIG P320.
Yeah. Shitty gun. And I know.
I like the 320 personally.
That's why I called it a shitty gun right in front of you.
Uh-huh. But here's the thing. He gets into this tussle with the ICE officers. They see he has a gun.
Yeah.
They yell, gun, gun, gun.
Yeah.
One ICE officer is removing the gun, and he's stepping away. And in one frame, it looks like the gun goes off, and that's the first shot. So these other ICE officers who are standing there are going, holy shit, he just shot. They didn't realize the gun was taken. So that's why you have all these ICE officers unloading on him.
Yeah, I don't think it even needs to be that complicated. The guy was visibly grabbing for ICE agents' guns. That's all you need. So it's been a few years since I've lived in Minnesota, but when I did live in Minnesota, I was a firearms instructor in Minnesota. I was a guy that you could take a class from to get your CCW from. So I had to teach people what the Minnesota law tells you about concealed carry. And one of the things that Minnesota law tells you is you have a duty to retreat and de-escalate.
Well, that's you should Minnesota.
It's Minnesota, exactly. And so you should only use your gun if your life is in imminent danger, not even for other people, just your life, and only if you don't have other options. That completely disqualifies this guy from acting the way that he did. Because in Texas, we have very different laws, better laws, obviously. But by Minnesota law, if he was carrying, the activities that he was allowed to engage in were much more limited than the activities he could engage in if he was not carrying. There's also in Minnesota, at least back when I was doing the classes back then, and what now 15, 16 years ago, there was a requirement to notify a police officer that you are armed when interacting with a police officer. You didn't need to give him your gun, but you needed to let him know that you were armed, and then he could ask you for your permit and your driver's license. In Minnesota, you have to present both a driver's license and a concealed carry permit.
So in Texas, you do not have a duty to notify, but if you're licensed, if you've got a CHL, you have to carry hand them your CHL when you are stopped as part of your ID.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no duty to notify. So there's some differences there. But look, I don't know if it was suicide by cop, like some people are saying, but it was definitely to provoke a response.
Yeah.
And I think the most likely aspect is either the cop pulled the trigger on the SIG accidentally because he was freaking out and nervous, or there was some sort of discharge.
If you watch the way that he picks the gun up, it's not in a position where his finger would have been near the trigger.
Right.
Like he didn't pick it up.
The slide clearly moves on that gun. The gun went off.
But that's the other thing. It looked like the slide was back. So he probably picked it up and immediately opened up the gun for safety reasons. And then could have certainly had a slam fire.
Yeah.
Which those guns are prone to do.
Well, most guns
let me clarify that in the hands of a police officer, the SIG 320 tends to fire by itself.
Sure.
We have three of them that have done that now. So
Anyway, I don't think the cops meant to kill the guy. Like, I don't think that's they. Like, I had one friend of mine that's of a more liberal persuasion literally text me, so ICE is executing U.S. citizens in the streets now. And I'm like, that is so not what happened. Yeah, but both with Pretty and Good, we have this, you know, what Scott Adams would call, shout out Scott, R.I.P., we would have, you know, the one screen, two movies effect. And what is so sick about Purdy, did you see that MSNBC ran a Photoshopped image of him?
No.
Yeah, they changed his jawline. They made him look better. They bulked up his arms and his chest.
They did the opposite of what they did to Trump and Joe Rogan.
Yeah, okay. They literally made him more attractive.
Okay.
Why, they're going for the Luigi, the Mangione effect. The Mangione effect.
I don't understand.
When you put the two images side by side, it is sick.
But what does that get you? Like, who? It's
liberal stupid. Women wanting to fuck him and but going, "Oh my god, they killed him." Women
are by default automatically going to say, "Oh, they killed him. He must have been the guy, you know, the good guy," because that's how liberal women think. So you don't need to make him pretty for them to be on your side if you're trying to achieve that. That's the part I don't understand. It's like the photo manipulation shit doesn't do anything, because the only people that think that that is a better representation are people that are already on your side anyway. So it's just silly to do. Whether somebody looks good or doesn't look good, just leave them alone. Mm-hmm. It's not going to affect anybody. Like, no one's going to say, boy, if he was any uglier, I think I would be siding with ICE. No one is saying that.
I don't know, man. It's insane. MSNBC, or MS Now, rather, sure did it.
Well, CBS didn't.
Okay. And that's part of what people are saying is they're looking at both, you know, all the different coverage. And
it's nutty. To me, and I saw this not quite real time, but probably within about half an hour of it happening. And immediately, from the two angles that we originally saw, I said, guys, if we're looking at this video in concealed carry class in Minnesota, this would be considered a clean shoot.
Oh, yeah. And the officers aren't going to face any repercussions from this. But one of the things that's going on, you saw what's his name who does the undercover stuff. God.
Which guy? Jose Rivera?
No, James Keefe. James O'Keefe.
O'Keefe
Media Group.
Oh, with the crazy wig.
Right, but no. Did you see the text message he got?
Yeah. So we know your car's license plate.
Yeah.
We know who you are.
Your cell phone.
You have 1 hour to leave before you get killed.
And they are doing this to ICE officers. Mm-hmm. ICE officers are getting death threats. They know what hotel rooms they're staying in. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a very coordinated thing. As Signal Gate, the next Signal Gate, has proven.
Well, the guy that really kind of broke all the Signal Gate thing is, God, I'm breaking out his name. I'm in the senior moment here. God damn. You don't remember his name?
Who?
Cam Higby. So Cam Higby was the guy that I hang out here with in Austin when he was here. Remember I told you I met up with him at UT and then some curious shit over when they set up their little... He's one of the guys that kept doing prove me wrongs on college campuses. Right after Charlie got shot, like, Cam never stopped doing these. And now Cam's in Minneapolis, and he's the one that just broke the Signal Gate thing, and just how well coordinated and professionally managed this whole operation is up there. So, I mean, the guy's doing God's work, and I gave him cash when he was here as a donation for that exact reason. Very good guy. So if you're not watching him on YouTube or on X, definitely go look up Cam Higby. And he's got a couple other guys that are traveling the country with him to college campuses and stuff, but it's good stuff. They've definitely taken up the mantle of what, like,
Charlie was
Crowder used to do, really, more than Charlie. before Crowder got big and then scared to leave his studio.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think Crowder's Cam still is, doing quite a bit.
Cam is, I don't know, I'd say he's still in his 20s. He's probably in his mid to late 20s. I think those guys are like 5 years out of college. And so they're still young enough to not know the value of their lives. So they're willing to risk their lives at college campuses, which is great because somebody has to, and it ain't going to be the older guys.
The people who have something to live for.
Well, I think when Crowder, last time he was at a college campus, he had over 20 security guys with him. I mean, that's not really what he used to do 10 years ago when he was doing the prove me wrongs.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as the shooting, it was definitely a clean shoot. Anyone that thinks otherwise doesn't understand the law. Anyone that wants to bring a gun to a gunfight ought to expect that they may not be the one walking out.
This is Ben, this is Gene, we're good old, you know. We'd like to remind you halfway through the show. If you like our jabber, please let others know. This is Gene, this is Ben, with the rest of the show.
So, Minnesota in general, with the pullback that we see the Trump admin doing, are you on the defeatist train that it's, you know, just Trump surrendering? Or do you think...
No.
What do you think?
I think we're going to see a lot of National Guard in Minnesota very soon.
Yeah.
And I mean non-Minnesotan based, because I've got guys that I know that are pretty high up in there, and they've been getting... A lot of their units to get coordinated for a large operation in the U.S.
I wouldn't be surprised.
So I especially think as soon as you hear that the Insurrection Act has been utilized, you're going to find out that same day that there's 20,000 National Guard troops that just arrived.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, like, bigger than the city population size.
Well... with the Ilhan Omar winery investigation that's coming on, all this other fraud investigation that's going on.
That keeps on giving, man.
Man,
a Muslim winery. Non-drinking winery.
I really think Minnesota and Georgia are going to be the two states that break the Democrats back before the midterms. Like, you saw the FBI raid, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
Georgia. On the election headquarters in Georgia.
Yeah.
Pretty fucking serious.
Yeah, it's good. It's just, I wish somebody other than Pam Bondi was in there to actually head this stuff, not somebody that just... This is Trump's weakness. His kryptonite is blonde chicks. He just, he can't help himself.
I don't know. We'll see. I think he's put Bondi on a pretty tight leash.
Yeah, that she should have never been there. Dude, look at what Bondi's done in her career. She is not a constitutional lawyer. She's never litigated in front of the Supreme Court. She is basically Trump's personal blonde chick lawyer. That's all she was. She was doing cases for him in Florida. You don't bring that person in to handle... I mean, he could have given her plenty of work, right? Without making her the U.S. Attorney General. That is just insane. So I think that was one of his many female related mistakes that he made.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what all comes out of this, but I think you have absolutely all you need to invoke the Insurrection Act. I think it's clear that the president can do it. Mm-hmm. I think Tim Walz and team are very dirty and very guilty. I think a lot of the Minnesota politicians are. And I think going to be really interesting to see what happens. And it's interesting that he pulled back Gnome and the other guy.
Well,
and sent in Tom Holman, who is a bulldog of his own right.
Yeah. I mean, Tom Holman is he's a career guy in that area and he doesn't have to buy a new suit for every appearance.
Yeah,
unlike Gnome.
Gnome, yeah.
Which, I mean, she really is the caricature of her on South Park.